And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this somber and probably being a little bit emotional as a breakdown podcast here in terms of there's going to be some very strong opinions voiced tonight as we look at this 39-0 drumming as the Northwestern Wildcats sink their teeth into the Minnesota Golden Gophers on Saturday. It wasn't pretty from the second quarter on, a 25-point second quarter for the Northwestern Wildcats. Minnesota has almost as many turnovers on offense as they do first downs. They have more interceptions than completions on offense, and the defense can't stop anything on the ground or through the air. So this is going to be a little bit of a venting edition. This is going to be Gopher Fan Line with Derek Burns joining us back from Saskatchewan, back from Saskatoon, back here in the United States of America, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman Derek Burns. Derek, I know we've been talking quite a bit here in the pre-production meeting before we started recording here, but how are you tonight and how are things?
I'm doing well, guys. I appreciate you having me back on. And there's, you know, it was a rough one, but as always, there's things we can take and things to break down, maybe a bit shorter than usual, but we can always learn something.
All right, let's, boy, it's kind of hard to know even where to start. Not a great game, really, in any phase of the game. So the Gophers give up 39 points. Maybe we can start defensively because, quite frankly, the offense probably had its worst output all season. Defensively, I guess we touched on this in the pre-production meeting, but I mean, what were they doing defensively, Derek? It just seemed like they were not able to identify plays. They were just struggling massively, getting calls in late. Just nothing seemed to work particularly well.
Yeah, I think that Northwestern had scouted the Gophers and saw, as you would as an offensive unit, you pick out those things that the Gophers have struggled at. Recently, that's been overrunning their gaps on plays, leaving themselves open to things like cutbacks. And so Northwestern started the game. If you notice, they kind of kept the outside pin and pulls in their pocket to begin with, and instead came out and ran a lot of inside zone, a lot of power and things like that to keep it inside. And what happened was they ran straight at the Gophers. And I don't know that Minnesota was prepared for that. I think Northwestern's identity, and as you guys have talked about earlier in the year and on previous podcasts, their identity has been a lot of three-step drop passing, a lot of bubble screen, more of the pitch and catch offense. Now, on Saturday, the weather probably had something to do with it, but I also think that Northwestern schemed to run at the Gophers, and they weren't prepared for it. So what we saw was similar to what we had seen earlier in the year. You saw the linebackers overrunning things at times, and other times being out of gap where you need a secondary player to come up and fill their gap to turn a, you know, run that breaks the line of scrimmage to keep that a 4 to 6 yard run. And they struggled at that. Many times the safeties are playing with their heels at 14, 16 yards, and it was difficult for them to come up and make an open field tackle. And so that resulted in Northwestern getting a lot of explosive gains in the running. And then, add insult to injury, they had the short field several times and they were able to capitalize on turnovers. So I would say to start with, you know, the theme was, again, just Northwestern came out, wanted to run straight at them. Gophers weren't prepared for it and really struggled, particularly at the linebacker and secondary levels.
Well, I think what, again, so if you're Rob Smith and you're game planning this throughout the entire week, we talked about it in the preview show, that Clayton Thorson coming into this game during Big Ten play, the Northwestern quarterback, had not thrown less than 35 times in every Big Ten game. And in three of his last five games, he'd thrown more than 45 times. Now, you know, Derek mentions the weather. The weather absolutely played a gigantic part in, I think, Northwestern being able to switch their game plan to something different. And it's very disappointing for me that Minnesota didn't take the weather into account. Yes, you know, you don't really look at the weather, or, you know, more times than not, you shouldn't until you're 48, 24 hours away. But you have to look and see that, again, if the forecast is calling for 25-mile-an-hour sustained winds, and Evanston is in a gale warning in terms of gale-forced winds, I know that I was monitoring the weather throughout the game, and Lake Michigan, just beside Northwestern there, registered a 16-foot wave. A 16-foot wave on Lake Michigan, which is just absurd because there were gusts up to 50-plus miles an hour. So if you see that in the forecast, you might want to take into account that I wonder if Northwestern might try to change their game plan because they know that they're not going to be able to pass the ball because the winds are going to be absurdly high. Put that together with it was like 38 degrees with the wind chill. You're in the low 20s, plus it was sneeting. You know, it's just disappointing for me that, as Derek mentions, Minnesota definitely looked like they were they had game plan for that spread attack that Northwestern had shown in basically every Big Ten game. But Northwestern is the team that adapted, and they're the ones that won because of it. They were willing to change. They knew that the weather was going to dictate some things, and so they just ran a lot of gap and zone, and they just ran it down Minnesota's throats. They ran it 55 times. 55 times. They ran it 55 times. Minnesota only ran 49 plays, so Northwestern ran more run plays than Minnesota had total plays, and they ran it for 5 yards a carry on 55 plays. That is just it's inexcusable for me.
Yeah.
And, again, it's just something where why didn't Minnesota think, again, as you're getting closer and closer to the game to check the weather to see maybe Northwestern won't throw it 45 times because it's going to be gale force winds throughout their entire game. And Derek mentioned it. There were many times when I was watching back the film today that Minnesota was out of position. They weren't prepared for what these two tight end and three tight end sets at times were looking like, and they didn't know who their responsibilities were. You saw that especially in the red zone when Northwestern would run a crossing route with their tight end, and Minnesota was a step late on all of it, and that meant Clayton Thorson could find the ball or find his guy wide open, and he can run in for the touchdown. So, for as much crap as we're giving the defense, they weren't really helped out a whole lot. When you look at the first four touchdowns of the game for Northwestern, or at least the last four touchdowns on the game for Northwestern, they started their Minnesota had a short field in four of them at the 36, the 49, or excuse me, the 36, the 15, the 49, the 27, and the 24. The defense didn't have much of a chance because the offense was completely inept, but it is very concerning to see a Northwestern team that had not run for over 100 yards in two of their last three games, and they're able to come into Minnesota in this game and run it down their throat for 277 yards. So not a good day for that defense overall. Again, one of the things that I kind of noticed, and I want to ask Derek about it, Luke, is, I think the defensive line, this was the first game I'd really seen that they were actually, getting pushed around a little bit. The linebackers didn't have a great game, specifically Jonathan Celestine. I know that he's playing through a elbow injury, but his ability or his lack of ability to read anything right now is very concerning. His ability or his lack of ability to run into contact, his lack of ability to really do a whole lot of anything right now is very concerning. He's injured. And it was clear from watching the tape back that he wasn't doing a whole lot. And then the secondary continues to miss tackles, take poor angles, amongst other things. So, Derek, what did you think about the three levels of Minnesota's defense? And was it just an entire team effort, or do you think it was just a couple of units?
Well, I actually thought on the defensive line, Northwestern was able to catch them in a few stunts and blitzes, which really hurt them. And when you run an offensive zone running scheme like Northwestern did for most of the game with an inside zone, you're able to wash down some of those stunts, and that's the idea, is you're blocking a gap. And so Minnesota had success at times where if they stunted the right direction or they stunted into the play, that was where you saw them with a tackle for loss or able to come up with a hit close to the line of scrimmage. But when they got caught the other way, where they didn't have the right call or didn't have the right stunt or blitz on, that's where I think it looked like, they were getting pushed around a bit on defense. I think the times that they played head up, especially in the interior defensive line, I think they did okay. Where it really started to have trouble was, again, on the linebacker level. And, Jonathan Celestine just does not look himself. I know you've talked about he's dealing with an injury. I don't know what, if anything else, is going on, but he had a real rough game, not just physically, but mentally, diagnosing some of the plays. And, on some of those, jumping outside, jumping out of this gap, and you know, letting things cut back inside him, which hurt them at times. So I think linebacker level was not, it was, they struggled. It was not one of their best efforts. And then in the secondary, we're back to what we've talked about, and it all goes back to, and it hasn't changed since the beginning of the year, which is they don't have the personnel right now to play, to bring guys up and play press man coverage and leave themselves in a cover one or a cover zero look. So what happens is they've got to play with one or two deep safeties to take away any deep passes in the middle of the field so they don't give up the home run. And that leaves those guys on an island. If Northwestern's able to break through on a run, they're literally out, you know, again, on an island trying to make an open field tackle at, you know, 8, 10, 12 yards down the field. And so that's not their best look. It's a different scheme than what the Gophers have run in past years where they really bring their safeties up on run support. I would say on the secondary level, they struggled as well. And it seemed to, you know, it seemed to wear them down. I think the turnovers from the offense really kind of took the spirit out of the defense and wore them down as the game went on.
Just real quick from either of you, any player stand out that had a, you know, flashes of not flashes of brilliance, but, you know, made some nice plays.
I thought Carter Coughlin played well.
Okay.
Again, I think that, he's continuing to learn and get better each week at knowing how to play with leverage against the run. He's able to, you're seeing more and more, especially as teams are trying to run zone and he's matched up, against the tight end. He's able to play with leverage, get his arms extended. And I've seen him pancake a couple of tight ends, especially on Saturday. Now, again, two tackles for loss, a sack. He gets Minnesota's first sack of the game on the first possession on a great stunt by Rob Smith to bring him inside, where Steven Richardson once again deserves all the credit because he handles him a double team and he pushes him 3 yards in the backfield. Carter comes around into the A-gap. The center and the right guard aren't able to turn their heads quick enough, and there's Carter Coughlin benefiting from Steven Richardson. So, you know, outside of that, you know, Thomas Barber, again, 10 solo tackles. He has 15 tackles on the day. He has to do a whole heck of a lot because he didn't get a lot of help from his linebacker buddy there. So, Derek, do you have any other guys you kind of want to highlight?
Well, I think it might not show up on the stat line, but I think Steven Richardson held his own. He's an experienced guy, and particularly on some of the short yardage plays, you could see Northwestern getting a good push up front, but always with the exception of Steven. I mean, he's a guy that likes to play on the offensive side of the line of scrimmage, and I thought he kept that up. And again, when he was in a mano-a-mano and not in a twist or a blitz or a stunt or something like that, he was able to hold his own. And then he might not have another guy that might not have had a ton of snaps, but once again, Blake Cashman, I thought was a guy that he has the recovery speed to play in the open field, and he's able to, even if he's out of position or coming from the weak side to try and chase the play down, he has the recovery and closing speed to make up for that. And so I thought he had he played okay. And also would agree with Carter Coughlin. I think we said it last time, is his, if there's a guy that's improved in one facet on this team more than anybody else, I would nominate Carter Coughlin for run defense this year. Guy that we always knew could rush the passer. We had question marks about his run defense only because he's a little undersized and we question, and he's not only held his own, he's now to the point in the last few games where he's becoming almost dominant and able to get leverage and stand some of those linemen up. So I would agree with your sentiment on that, Ryan.
Real quick, either of you think that there's any chance he stays there? I'd imagine he goes back to linebacker next year.
Yes. And again, I get some people on Gopher Illustrated saying, well, why wouldn't you just stick Carter Coughlin at rush DN for the next 2 years? Maybe because he was the most highly talented
right.
and thought of and recruited
exactly.
linebacker in the country in 2016. He was like a top. He was the number one linebacker in the Midwest. I'm going to move him back to linebacker. I'm going to have him, Barber, and Kamal figure it out for 2 years with Blake Cashman in there for next year. And we're going to go from there. So I'm going to let the natural linebacker assimilate back to the linebacker position, and we're going to see how explosive and how what his ceiling could be here for the next 2 years, starting in the spring at least.
All right, let's flip to the other side of the ball. A Gopher offense, you know, real struggle of a day. geez, more interceptions than you had completions. That's never good. I thought, you know, they actually ran the ball okay in moments. Both McCrary and Rodney Smith actually averaged above 5 yards a carry. Rodney Smith was 5.3 yards per carry, and Colby McCrary was 6.9. But actually both had fumbles, which obviously isn't great. Derek, I mean, boy, offensively, it's really tough to find some positives, you know, between injuries and, you know, all the like, you know, some retirement of your one offensive tackle. I mean, boy, how do you even break this one down?
Well, I think that we're left, you know, when the score gets lopsided like this, we're left with trying to theorize what might have happened had the game been closer. And I do think Minnesota did have some success at times running the ball, as you mentioned, on the per carry average. They were able to break a couple explosive gains. Rodney Smith had a really nice run early in the game. And I think Minnesota had schemed to run a bit less zone read. They were back to calling some of the inside zones. They brought in a weak side handoff, which is a little wrinkle to the inside zone, to try and get those running backs out on the edge quicker off of inside zone. And that resulted in one of their explosive gains early in the game. And again, although Northwestern's defensive line, I was very impressed with them. I thought that was a good physical unit, and, you know, fared very well against a battered Minnesota offensive line. We're left to wonder, had the score been closer, whether Minnesota would have been able to run the ball even more and perhaps even better. So I think that was something they didn't do. You know, at times they showed some promise. Other times, you know, when Northwestern, as the game went on, run blitzed a bit more and really kind of bogged things down for them. And then secondly, I would say very tough game for Demaree Croft at times from a mental standpoint. Made some bad decisions reading the pre and post snap reads, but throwing the ball, his accuracy, I think he's getting better there. I think he's improving with his throws and putting the ball where it needs to be. Again, mentally, a few times he doesn't see a defensive back in zone coverage, steps in front of the ball. He makes a bad decision to throw, you know, a comeback route on the corner sitting with inside leverage. So had some problems there. But throwing the ball, I think he showed, and again, early, I think he showed some promise. But the other side of that coin is the receivers. I don't know that I've, to be honest, I don't know if I've seen a stretch in the last few games where the drops have been worse, to be honest. And so he's certainly not getting any help there. But those two things, I think, had the game not been upside down right away, might have fared a bit better for him.
Oh, where to start with the offense? 0 points, 1 of 11 on third down. 182 total yards, I guess, let's start there. Minnesota has 182 total yards in the day, and 140 of those came on 6 plays, all right? Minnesota ran 49 plays in the day. So what did they do on those other 43 plays, Derek? They gained a total of 42 yards. That is less than a yard a play. They had 5 turnovers. Again, you mentioned the running backs. The running backs actually were pretty successful at running the ball. The issue was both of them had fumbles in their own territory, which set up scores. And Minnesota, I don't know what else to say about the receivers right now. We talked about Tyler Johnson going down with a broken wrist. No Demetrius Douglas. I'm good with – I don't really need to see a lot more from Rashad Still. I'd like to see – Matt Morse out there potentially. I'd like to see somebody else against Wisconsin. You know, he starts off the game with a nice catch over his shoulder there on a 50-50 ball. Then he has 2 passes clank off his hands. I don't know what route he was attempting to run on the first interception. It was 3rd and 6. I believe he was trying to run a 9-yard comeback. And the issue is he ran 9 yards, so he ran 3 yards past the sticks, and then he turned around, and I think he even turned the wrong way, like I think Luke mentioned in the pre-production meeting, just not giving a whole lot of effort, and he's not having a lot of execution. And it just seems like, I don't have the stats in front of me, that when Rashad Still is targeted, it's either it's going to clank off his hands or it's going to be an interception. Just the Minnesota receivers on 11 dropbacks had 6 drops. And Demery had 2 throwaways, and then there were 3 picks. So Minnesota completes their first 2 passes of the game, and then they don't complete another pass for the next 56 minutes. So we are 56 minutes since the last time Minnesota has completed a pass during a game. And Derek mentioned it, and I think even Luke, you brought this up in the pre-production meeting as well. I don't think Demery's playing that bad that a 2 for 11 with 3 pick stat line would show you, because first interception, yes, it was a poor read, but what in the world was Rashad Still doing? He didn't even fight for the ball, didn't come back to the ball, and it's an easy pick. On the second one, that is on him. He never saw the safety there. He didn't get enough on it. He short-armed it with the wind at his back. That's, again, a young quarterback. And then his third interception hits Philip Howard between the 2 and the 5 on his chest and bounces off his chest up into the air, and a safety picks it off.
Which, and that should have been a touchdown, right, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
You are correct. That should have been a touchdown. And then we have drops from Drew Hamileski, Mark Williams, Philip Howard, Rashad Still. Just no one could get involved. And I speculated, if you remember, in the preview episode for this game, Luke, that maybe Brandon Lingan gets involved. I don't think Brandon Lingan has a target in the last 3 weeks now.
Yeah, I don't think
Minnesota,
so.
It's bad. And again, I think we're at 16 drops in the last 4 games. And I don't have an answer for you, especially going into Wisconsin. I know people are loving to kind of criticize Matt Simon. I just don't think that's where the blame deserves to go. I think it deserves to just Minnesota needs to get some wide receiver talent in here. And that's plain and simple. We should be talking about a 2014 wide receiver class that was maybe the most heralded in the last decade of rejuvenate each one of your minds here for those of you who have followed recruiting here for the last few years. Let's see, Melvin Holland Jr., Connor Krasanchik, Desmond Gant, and Isaiah Gentry. Those 4 were supposed to be the ones that were going to turn things here at the University of Minnesota, and they should be redshirt juniors, if not true seniors here. Well, none of them are. One of them is still on the team. Krasanchik transferred out. Gant transferred out. Gentry has now transferred out of football, and then Melvin Holland was injured. He wasn't a part of the main rotation, and I believe he's going to move on after this year. So it's just it's tough to continue to throw the ball, and I kind of feel for Kirk Schrock in the fact that he wants to pass the ball more. Like, Minnesota had 11 plays, I believe, in the fourth quarter, and they were all running plays. And you're down 30, and you're going to run the ball 10 times and not pass it once. Well, why would you want him to call a passing play when either the result on Saturday was a drop pass or it was an interception? So it's just tough for me to – and again, I feel for Demery Croft, and I kind of feel for Kirk Schrock in the aspect that, you know, he wants to call more running plays. But if they're just going to clank off the receiver's hands and set you up for second and 10 or something, I mean, what do you want to do? So it's just it's disappointing. And the other thing that, and again, Derek, I want to ask you about this, is the read option game. Yeah, I'm well aware of how successful Demery Croft was against Nebraska running it. I think that's just some of it's because Demery, I think, was healthy then. Nebraska's run fit was worse than I've seen at any point Big Ten team play this season. But what I noticed, or at least I thought I noticed on tape, Derek, was that Northwestern, to combat that, brought an extra edge man off the edge, trying to make sure that Demery, you're not going to be able to turn the corner. If you're going to beat us, it's going to be a running back right up the middle. So what did you think of the lack of read option game? Demery did talk about after the game in the postgame press conference that he's dealing with a lower body injury now, and that could have contributed to it as well. But I thought that Northwestern had schemed the read option particularly well.
Yep, I think that both of those things were a factor. We talked about it before we came on tonight, that I felt anyway that Demery looked like he was not 100% running the ball. That went for runs, but also just scrambling around. He didn't seem to have the same mobility that he had in previous games. And so I felt the first thing was that the offensive coaching staff called a lot less read option. Well, they did. You could see that most of their inside zone runs were straight inside zone, as I mentioned, with like a weak side handoff. Very few reads on those plays. But also, to your point, Northwestern liked to, in run situations, stay in the zone defense, which left the lateral outside defenders there to cover to keep. Now, they didn't do that on every play, so then you're basically, you know, if you want to attack it with read option, you're rolling the dice. So you're guessing that they're not going to have that outside defender in zone, and that you're going to be able to read option the end man. And if you guess right, you're going to be able to pick up some yards. But if you don't, it's going to be dead in the water. So I think it was both of those things were a factor that took the option keep play out of the playbook for them.
Yeah, I really don't know where to go after this. This is just not a good game. You know, as Fleck said after the Michigan game, yep, we flat out got trounced. And I think I haven't followed any of his comments since, but
he was about as somber and as bitter as I've seen him. And obviously, for rightfully so, his offense couldn't get anything going, and that this is a theme now. You know, everybody listening to this podcast knows that I'm the worst with trying to remember sayings, but this is the third time in the last four games Minnesota has scored 10 points or less. Scored 10 points against Iowa, they scored 10 points against Michigan. They ran into just inadequate Nebraska defense at home. They put up the 50 burger, and then they come back with 0 points against Northwestern. So, and you look at this Wisconsin team coming to town this weekend, who is one of the best defenses in America. Yeah, I'm going to be I was talking with Derek and Luke in the pre-production meeting. I'm trying to set a line for the number of points Minnesota scores in this game, and I have the line right now at 6.5. I just don't know how Minnesota is going to score. The offense can't get anything going because they can't pass the ball because the receivers can't catch. They're going to be down. And here's another thing we have to talk about is the offensive line. Connor Olson goes down with a foot injury. Folks will remember he couldn't put any weight on that left foot. I believe he did return, but my guess would be that's a high ankle sprain. So the swelling isn't there right now. He could play three for the rest of the game. But if it is an ankle sprain, that thing is extra sore right now. He's probably in a boot. He's probably not doing anything all week. So if Connor Olson's not able to play, you'll remember that Garrison Wright went down with a hand injury against Nebraska. He was playing left guard, but he had a gigantic club on his left hand, and he was, in my opinion anyway, ineffective doing it. So Minnesota has two backup linemen right now because right tackle Nick Conley retired because of injuries, unfortunately, for him. Jared Weiler's already out. Connor Olson's out. Garrison Wright was just taken off for the entire second half. So you're looking at an offensive line of Donnell Green, Sam Schluter at right tackle, Vincent Calhoun at right guard, Gwynn Oslin at left guard, and Bronson Dobich at center. I don't know who is the next lineman in because between injuries and Minnesota trying to preserving red shirts, and I asked Derek this question, and I mean, he might be right that if Minnesota has an offensive lineman go down on Saturday and Connor Olson's not available, we might be looking at Nate Wozniak sliding into tackle and Schluter sliding into guard or wherever they need him to play because Minnesota doesn't have any more healthy linemen.
Are there any?
That's where we're at right now.
Are there any defensive linemen that could help out?
I don't know what they're going
pinch?
To do. I'm sure they're. I'm sure they're talking about here.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're talking about it here during the week, but I just don't know what they're going to do. So we're down our top two receivers. Shannon Brooks has been in the concussion protocol for many weeks, and that's extremely concerning for me. Anytime you have a head injury, I'm sure folks know are well aware of the past history of head injuries here at Minnesota. The offensive line is in shambles. We can't. Our quarterback can't complete a pass because our pass catchers can't catch it. It is just. And now we have Wisconsin coming to town. On an undefeated season, they have taken care of business the last 2 weeks against ranked opponents, and their defense has been extremely elite all season long. So it is just something to where I'm sitting here on Monday night just trying to think of ways Minnesota can score the ball on offense. And, Minnesota did try a trick play, Derek. You know, they tried the Mark Williams pass, considering Mark Williams came to Minnesota as a quarterback. And I'm sure you're going to be shocked to learn this, Derek, but no one was open because either no one's open or when they are open, they drop the ball. So, Luke, do you have anything else that you really want to talk about on the offensive side of the ball? I mean, we can talk a little bit of special teams because I do think that that did play a factor because the punting game was not a strength for Minnesota.
No.
Ryan Santoso on 8 punts has a 36-yard average. where the Northwestern punter had a 49-yard average on his six punts. You look at that second quarter specifically and how bad it was for Minnesota, the punting game contributed to that. Northwestern puts up 25 points in the second quarter. A large part of that is because of two turnovers that gave Northwestern great field position, but also because Minnesota's punting game had two punts for an average of 23 yards. That is the definition of not flipping the field. So, again, Minnesota special teams also went back to what we thought it was, and where they don't, they're incapable of returning a punt. And we're talking about, not a whole lot going on in the kick return game with Rodney Smith, 4 for 56 on the day, an average of 14 yards. So, anything else you guys want to talk about before I kind of want to ask Derek a couple of questions about the Wisconsin Badgers?
I got one that's not related to Gopher football. I'd be curious. So we know that Wisconsin is going to win the Big Ten West. I think they've already clinched it, right? I'm curious, Derek, who do you want to see them match up with out of the East?
Aren't they matched up with Ohio State?
I guess I don't know tiebreakers, but if Ohio State were to lose, I mean, you potentially would have Penn State and Michigan State. They'd all be tied if both of those win. I don't know this specifics. I haven't looked into it, but I'd be interested to know who Derek would like to see them play in the, who poses the best test for Wisconsin. Maybe I think all of them probably pose a good test, but
in my opinion, I think Ohio State and Penn State are better. Those two would be better than Michigan State between the three. I would say Ohio State probably won. Ohio State, don't want to get off on too big of a tangent, but we're talking about finishing out the end of the year and the injuries piling up. Ohio State, if you look at the depth, this is my opinion. If you look at the teams that enter November with a good trajectory, I know Ohio State had a terrible game against Iowa, but in the other times, it's very almost predictable that Ohio State has a if they played that poorly, it's usually in the beginning of the year, but they have the depth and the talent to ride out these years and just get better and better as the season goes on. And I think they can weather injuries because they're so deep, they have so much talent. And so I think they're, come November, almost every November, I think they're the best team in the Big Ten because of that. So I would probably put them at one, and Penn State probably at a two for the teams out of the East.
I still think, I don't know if this is, maybe this is just me with the conspiracy theory, but I still think Ohio State makes the college football playoff. So I think they beat Michigan this weekend, and I think they take care of the Badgers. Because, again, they have played extremely well for their 9 wins, mm-hmm. but their 2 losses have just been inexcusable. But again, before we kind of get off on that tangent, I do want to ask Derek, when we're looking forward to Axe Week on Saturday, what were your memories of playing against Wisconsin for the Axe? And then my second part of that is, how does Minnesota stop Wisconsin from putting up over 375 rushing yards against them at TCF Bank Stadium?
Well, if I were to answer the defensive strategy question first, it's going to be interesting because Minnesota defensive coordinators and game plan are going to have a choice, I believe. They're maybe going to have to break their tendency. Well, one choice is to break their tendency and to bring guys up and play a little bit more with a single safety and a little bit more risky coverage. I think they're going to have to do that at times in order to slow down Wisconsin's running attack. Their hallmark is that they run the ball well. They have for years. And so you see that they typically have success as the game goes on just through attrition. Their defense is good, so they're usually not playing from behind, and they can just wear teams down, and they tend to pile up the offensive touchdowns as the game goes on in the running attack. I think if Minnesota tries to stay in their too high safety, deep secondary look, they're going to give up some that's going to be a more conservative play, and they're going to give up some more of the 6 and 8 and 10 yard, probably not the home run, but I think that's going to add up for them. So how do you stop it? Your choice is again to either play your traditional look and try to limit those things and try and slow them down, or you can get a little bit more risky in the pass game, bring guys up, leave yourself a little bit more vulnerable in the pass game. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do and how they scheme. If I had to guess, they probably probably do come out a little bit more downhill in the box, bring some run blitzes early in the game, see if they can't contain Wisconsin early on. And then, as we've talked about, as a heavy underdog in other games, you're going to need some help. So you're going to need something in the turnover or special teams in order to give them an edge. And, you know, Wisconsin's quarterback has shown that he has turned the ball over. And so on defense, I think they try to contain things running and they try to hope for a fumble or an interception to try and help them out a little bit. As far as playing for the Axe, playing against Wisconsin, it's, you know, in my opinion, the Iowa rivalry is a storied rivalry. And I think for the fan base, especially the older fans, I think that's maybe the biggest deal to them. I think from the player standpoint and the guys I played with and some of the younger fans, I think the Axe is the biggest deal. And I think it has to do with how many of these guys cross borders in the recruiting war. And a lot of, you got some guys from Wisconsin that come over to Minnesota to play. You've got guys that leave Minnesota to go play for Wisconsin. And then you also have a lot of people come over that are working in the Twin Cities and Minnesota area that are Badger fans. And so I think that heats things up, and I think that's less so than Iowa. And so it's a huge deal. I mean, this is why, in my opinion, what separates college football from anything else. The rivalries are as big as anything in any sport. And so it's fun. It's passionate. I know despite the line, despite who's favored, you know, what's to be expected, I know there'll be a lot of passion. I know those guys will be fired up, and it'll be fun as it always is. And it'll be a big game. Doesn't matter what anybody's record is or what the line, it'll be a big game for both those teams.
I don't really have any other questions. But man, it is tough, you know, given the struggles this year. But I think one thing I just want to reiterate, and I know, Ryan, we talked about this last week. You know, I think that it's pretty clear, and maybe I like Derek's thoughts on this, but I think it's pretty clear that the Gophers probably could have won a couple more games. But Coach Fleck, he stuck to his laurels, and he basically said, hey, I am going to instill a culture, and I'm not going to sacrifice anything basically to get to just a couple more wins on the old record sheet. You know, that we saw the suspensions for a handful of guys, and you know, they weren't willing to compromise that. And, you know, in some ways I really respect that he did that. Now, it's been a really frustrating year as a result. I think that, you know, expectation wise should have been maybe 6 or 7 wins, and, you know, they're probably going to end up with 5 barring some sort of miracle on Saturday. But I don't think there's any questioning Flex philosophy at this point.
Yeah. Again, and I want to give credit where it's due. The man who did the research, and that's MV. Yes, that MV that you folks remember from the good old heydays of 2014 and 2015 of the FBT blog. He's the one who actually went through this data, and I think it illustrates where Minnesota's at right now. And he looked at the 24/7 composite ratings of Minnesota versus their opponents and Power 5 opponents since 2015. Minnesota is 8-1 against Power 5 teams with equal or less talent, according to the 24/7 recruiting rankings composite. And after Saturday's loss, they are just 4-13 against teams that have better talent. So, yes, the old staff was able to do some things to mask their lack of recruiting, but I think it's starting to show up. And that's where, again, as we sit here today or tonight, Minnesota is on track in about a month, 30 days from now, to sign their best class this decade. Again, the average, you know, the average commit of this class is the highest as well. So not only is it going to be the highest in terms of recruiting rankings, or Minnesota will fall, Minnesota's, you know, their mean or their average is also going to be the highest it's been in a decade. So you look at this class coming in, being able to play right away. Sure. But they're also going to be there to try and build depth, because you can see it. We've talked about the DBs. We've talked about the offensive line, the lack of wide receiver talent. Quarterback has obviously been an issue for many years here at Minnesota. And they still have to figure out how they're going to address that here in the next few weeks. But just give the man some time to get some freaking talent in here. Because as MV has it, again, Minnesota beats Power 5 teams that they are equal or less than talent to. But if they don't have enough talent to beat these other teams because they've been failing in recruiting, you're starting to see it show. And again, that's where I think Fleck can kind of bring things back, get Minnesota to those 8-plus win seasons where they've been through the last 4 years. But it's going to take some time to get a decent quarterback in here, get in some receivers that can catch consistently, get an offensive line that is formidable, and then get some defensive backs in here that can play press man so you can bring some pressure. So
Ryan,
just give it some time.
So, Ryan, for those people that don't follow recruiting, and I will admit to be one of them, I'm not a person that follows it incredibly closely. You know, there's frustration, obviously, where the Gophers are right now in terms of the win-loss, you know, columns. But, like, at least from the recruiting perspective, for those that don't follow, like, are you as optimistic as ever? Like, how optimistic are you compared to, you know, the record and those people that are just record-watching?
And how optimistic am I in terms of just because Minnesota just got their butt kicked? Is that going to affect recruiting in terms of that kind of thing? Or
no, just more so the fact that you have a you know, you have PJ Fleck and just like over the next couple of seasons, like how optimistic are you that he is going to raise the bar of recruiting?
Yeah, then that's what he's here to do. And if we wanted to just be at that 6 to 8 wins every year and be Glenn Mason, I mean, probably could have kept Tracy Clays and done that. You know, Minnesota probably wins 6 games this year with probably would have figured it out on defense a little bit more. And here we are, would be at 6 wins. And I don't know if that'd make people happy, but I think the ceiling with PJ here, someone that actually values recruiting, actually spends time recruiting as a head coach, something that can't be said about recent head coaches at the University of Minnesota. I think he has a much higher ceiling than what we've seen here previously. Again, half the, you know, most of the battle is just getting recruiting, you know, these getting talent in here. And now the next step and why Tim Brewster failed amongst other reasons was he couldn't develop talent worth crap. Now, I think that Kirk Shiraka can. I think that Matt Simon can. I think that Rob Smith can figure it out on defense, but you need to fix the offense before you can really do a whole lot. And I think they can get it done. Again, I just think the ceiling is much higher with PJ with how much attention to recruiting he pays. Again, because the stats don't lie. I gave you the stats that MV had there. Minnesota needs to get more talented, and I think PJ can get them there.
All right. So I want to thank everybody for listening. I'm impressed if you made it this 40-some minutes listening to people talk about a 39-0 loss. If you enjoy the podcast, absolutely check out Ryan's work. Maybe dig into recruiting and, you know, the hope that comes with recruiting on Gopher Illustrated. So for Ryan and for Derek, I'm Luke. Go Gophers.